First Baptist Church of Redmond, June 6th, 2021. Ecclesiastes, Chapter 3. Everything Beautiful.
Please rise and join me in reading Ecclesiastes 3:11. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their heart, without the possibility that mankind will find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. You may be seated.
If you're like me, you're more familiar with the King James rendering than the New American Standard rendering. He has made everything, it says, beautiful in its time. That was the source of the second song we sang today. It's rare for songs to be based on Ecclesiastes, but we had an Ecclesiastes-based verse, a song, Ecclesiastes 3:11. He has made everything beautiful in its time. I've selected Everything Beautiful as the sermon title. Contrast is with this picture. Has he wrapped up work as the voice of Darth Vader in the 2014 film Rogue One? James Earl Jones opened up with his struggle with a speech impediment. Listening to his deep, booming voice, this is CNN, threatening inept generals of the empire, you would never realize that the talent for which he is best known simultaneously is a pervasive struggle for him. His familiar voice was largely silent within his younger years, a result of an incredibly severe stutter. Though he was quiet, a teacher noticed that he enjoyed writing poetry. He told Jones, "If you like words that much, James, you ought to be able to say them out loud." To address his stuttering, Jones began performing Shakespeare. He shares, "If I hadn't been a stutterer, I would never have been an actor." Backstage, his script is always within reach. The words, even after 7 decades, have remained a career-long struggle for him. "I mangle a word or two every night because the consonants get a fight with the vowels." He was interviewed by Jamie Wax, and he referenced Jones' career as a pursuit of happiness. Jones had this to say, "By taking one step at a time, I've found great treasures. Every step I take, it's just about being content, that's all. You don't know what the pursuit of happiness is. What do you mean, pursuit of happiness? No, it's contentment. If that doesn't put a glow on your face, nothing really will." I contrast that and complement that with our words concerning work. I'm preaching from Ecclesiastes 3, verses 9 through 15. The first 8 verses of Ecclesiastes 3 assert God's providential control on life, but it does it without specifically mentioning God, the God who initiates and controls the schemes of people. Verses 9 through 15 rectify that thought. Humans are offered a life that is joyful, but not self-sufficient. "I have seen the task which God has given the sons of men, sons of mankind, with which to occupy themselves." Solomon's survey is no longer limited to what's under the sun. God's working is now mentioned. God's working is now under consideration. What was mentioned in passing in 1:13 is receiving fuller explanation. Our theme verse. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their human's heart, without the possibility that mankind will find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. This is the key verse of our passage. Appropriate. It's generally translated beautiful. It's used of things that are beautiful. And appropriate is used because it speaks about timing. Appropriate in its time. It describes everything in general as God's creation as beautiful in its time. Far from being a ground of despair, the times of earthly events are a source of God's delight, God's specificity, and God's fulfillment of prayer. God has also set eternity in their heart. It fits the context of the verse as well. The eternity in human hearts must be connected with the forever that will be referred to in verse 14. God's eternity among humans corresponds to something inside us. We have a capacity for eternal things. We are concerned about the future. We have a sense of something which transcends us. It's God. It is spoken of in Romans 1. But we have a God consciousness that waits to be fulfilled, I believe. Augustine first said, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you." Solomon would give testimony to that verse. "I know there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime." Do good is not used in a philanthropic sense. It's used in the sense of enjoying your own life, enjoying what God brings to you, enjoying both your limits and your limitlessness. It speaks of actively pursuing and practicing a good and happy life. Fretting about life. What are things people complain about? People, other people, not ourselves, but other people. Yes. You can complain about yourself, yes. Something else. Money? Being busy. In extremes. Too busy or bored? Okay. There's many things to complain about in life. Fretting about life has no result other than making yourself bitter. You can complain a little. Everybody complains a little. But if you complain and you start to believe it, you can make yourself bitter. You can make yourself disappointed. You can make yourself feel that something negative always happens. But that's bitterness. And you're called to trust in excellent rule, God's rule, over the course of life. Moreover, that every person who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor, this is the gift of God. Solomon is not a pessimist. Even if a man takes delight in material gifts that God permits to pass through his hands, such delights are nothing that is made for himself. This verse tells us that it's the gift that God honors us with. That's the attitude that we should cultivate, a thankful attitude ultimately towards God. I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it, and there is nothing to take from it. And God has so worked that people will fear him. Now Solomon's thought process turns the security, safety of the believer's life. Life under the sun, he's already said, is plagued with futility and unreliability. Security must be found elsewhere, must be found in God's grace and sovereignty over it. All this leads the wise to fear God, not in terror. The Bible speaks about not living in terror in the face of the monstrous expectations of the unknown. The opposite is meant. Reverence and awesome regard for our God, his provision, and his help. That which is already what has been, and that which will be has already been, and God seeks what has passed by. The opening phrase appeared in chapter 1, verse 9, indicating the permanent hopelessness of the unsaved in humanity's situation. Now it's used to affirm the security of the child of God's hope. God is the one keeping the cycles of history going. God seeks what has passed by. Seeks indicates God's watchful concern. What has passed by indicates hurry along. It's used in other places of the Bible in the sense of hurries along. The source of movement is God himself. God himself seeks what has passed by, means God himself, watchfully concerned about us, and hurries things along to find blessing. In chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, the structure of time and its movement of activity is because God watches over every movement with provincial concern for us. Life can be and should be lived in a positive, joyful disposition. Find something to be thankful for and hang your head on it. Everybody can be negative. It takes no effort to be negative. But this is a perspective we can choose if we begin with faith and gratitude. Hope in God is essential for us who are Christians, and gratitude for everything life brings us, even the discomfort, is a choice. The alternative is to attempt to find purpose within our own strength, which results in the futility of chasing after wind. I met a man in Romania, he's since moved to Israel and got married, who used to believe, used to work for SETI. He has told me that he doesn't think life is on other planets. It's because the Bible says it. But he got paid because he is a smart guy and has a PhD and was the only one that understood how radio telescopes work and could make them operate. In remote valley of California, 42 radio telescopes point skyward. The Allen Telescope Array is a new and powerful tool for an organization called SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute. The SETI Institute began decades ago, and this latest technological marvel represents a new phase in their cosmic research for extraterrestrial life. The array of large telescopes is listening very carefully to the universe. In sync with each other, the telescopes read and record distant radio frequencies from across the universe in the hope that something from the heavens will indicate the presence of an intelligent life form. While the technology is new, the search is not. For all of human history, humanity has looked upward and soulfully wondered, what is beyond? What might be there? If we're honest, we can all admit that we default to a SETI mode at times. We may not gaze through a telescope, but our wonderings cause us to search, to look up, look out, look beyond for something out there that will bring meaning to our lives here. The SETI Institute has invested millions in the hope that the heavens will say something to us. But perhaps our scientific dollars are not well used. Perhaps we've been simply unwilling or unable to hear what the heavens have been shouting all the time.